All right, welcome back in. Hour number two. We're live here at Smoke on the Water, set up in the bar area. Happy hour going on. And anytime you get Hel McGranahan from the Big Spur on, it's happy hour. Hel, I hope you're doing well this afternoon.
I'm awesome. Stoked. How about yourself, my man?
Can't complain, but I did some complaining in the previous hour about the college football playoff poll. Some issues, which is one of them. Number 15 ranked Florida, 6-3, getting beat 38-17 at home by a winless Missouri team. I'm sorry, they're not number 15, but South Carolina's got to go down to the swamp this weekend and take on a team that's lost back-to-back games, and they got to do it with a thin defense at this point in time. Hell, how have things played out this week? Is Coach Muschamp and staff may have to move some people around?
Well, it's certainly an interesting game. When you factor in all that stuff, and then, oh, by the way, you remember this is Muschamp's second trip back there since he took over at South Carolina, and the angle with Coach Spurrier and all that. Just an intriguing game. Has a little bit more intrigue given what you were saying about Florida Sturge. Is how in the world are those guys 15 in the college football? I mean, it just blows my mind too. Their best win is against an LSU team that, it quite frankly, is still overrated after getting beat 29-0. But I digress. I mean, this Florida team is pretty much on tilt at this point. I mean, you come out and get boat raced by a rival, and then turn around and lose to a Missouri team that, quite frankly, isn't very good. I think there's pretty good reason for those folks down there in Gainesville to be concerned about what the heck's going on, especially at that quarterback position. With Felipe Franks, or is it going to be Trask, or are they going to go with Emory Jones, the freshman, or do some Wildcat stuff? I don't know. It's just kind of a mess down there, and it's pretty remarkable to see how different things are for this team. I mean, 2 weeks ago, they're in that conversation for the East as one of those teams that could go get blown out by Alabama and Atlanta in a couple weeks. So it's just kind of odd to see how things have turned kind of quickly for those guys.
You mentioned the quarterback situation. Felipe Franks imploded last week against Missouri. He ended up being benched for Kyle Trask. But I think the thing that shocked me the most, it's what has always been a good defense there for the Gators. Gave up 471 yards, and quite frankly, it could have been more. It was an easy win for Missouri. But South Carolina, the one thing we know, that's a team that's going to fight hard, stay in it, and look for a chance to win there in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it kind of surprised me to see some of the rankings for Florida's defense when I was looking at where they stacked up against the other SEC teams. And there were a lot of categories where they're right there with South Carolina, either just one spot ahead of them or one spot behind them. And I think everybody around here in Columbia and up there in Greenville knows that South Carolina's defense has had some issues this year. And when you're right there neck and neck with a lot of important things like yards per play and rushing defense and yards per carry and stuff like that, it's going to be a problem for you long term. And I think if you're a South Carolina fan looking at this game, if you can continue having success running the ball and find another guy to be a 100 yard back for you, whether that's Mon Denson doing it for a second time in a row, or A.J. Turner, or who knows, maybe Tyson Williams or Rico Dowdy's healthy enough to get it done too. But there's reason for optimism in my mind because I think South Carolina, at least the way it looks on paper, is going to have a shot to be successful moving the ball on the ground. And as we all know, when they do that well, they have a pretty good chance of winning.
Yeah, and that's been the difference. You go back and look at, you know, the Vanderbilt game, or you go back and look at last week. Mon Dixon, a huge run there in the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, that's a pretty deep pool of running backs for the Gamecocks coming through some of those injuries. But, hell, the concern has to be in the defensive backfield what to do. You lose two safeties for the year. I have heard Shai Smith was meeting and looking at some time back there as well. What are they going to have to do to kind of mask that here over the next couple of weeks?
Well, first and foremost, they can't lose anybody else, Sturge. I mean, you mentioned Jamias Williams and Javon Charleston being done for the season after they both got hurt last weekend in Oxford. Well, Nick Harvey and JT Ebater are still out. They haven't played in, I guess, four games, and they're both out indefinitely. Haven't been ruled out for the season yet, but Yeah, that's four guys right there. Your top four guys at that one position, or two positions, I should say. And they're left basically with a couple of freshmen, guys who haven't played at all at this level, and another guy like Rashad Fenton, starting cornerback, and been a pretty good starting cornerback, but he's had to slide over and get some time at safety. Looks like they're going to have to utilize, and fortunately for South Carolina, Muschamp in particular, and his own sanity, since he coaches the position. They got a freshman safety in Jonathan Gibson, who's a pretty good player out of the Atlanta area. The new redshirt rule is going to allow them to to get him some action. I mean, there are five games left. Is to say he plays in all five. Maybe that happens. I would imagine, though, that they're looking at it like, hey, if we can just get him and four fewer, let's do that. So that's something they're going to do. And, of course, you mentioned Shai Smith, who it sounds like he's more of a, I guess, an emergency option at cornerback. But when you're already taking one of your cornerbacks and putting him at safety, you're taking a position that's still kind of thin, or was kind of thin to begin with, because, you know, they're relying on freshmen and J.C. Horn and Israel Mukwamu. I mean, it's just thin. It's razor thin back there, and they cannot afford to lose anybody else, and they're going to be kind of skating on again some thin ice here these last 4 weeks of the season.
As we continue with Hal McGranahan from thebigspur.com, you can follow him on Twitter just simply at Hal McGranahan. And, yeah, I guess the good thing for South Carolina football is, like I said, it's a tough-nosed team. They hang around. That was a huge four-quarter comeback at Ole Miss, and the offense is rolled into shape. And you know what? Right now, you may have to win games doing that, and Jacob Bentley's playing his best football right now as well.
Yeah, he's played pretty well since, I guess, about the second half of that Texas A&M game. Obviously didn't start well in that, but pieced it together a little bit better against a Tennessee team that you would kind of expect him to have some success against. And definitely a week later against an Ole Miss defense that's one of the worst in the country. And Jake went out and start to finish, which has been sort of an issue for him throughout his career, is being able to play well from first quarter to fourth quarter. He certainly did that against Ole Miss on Saturday. Had one of his best performances of his career. In fact, Muschamp said he thought it was the best performance of Bentley's career. He certainly put up a lot of career highs in some statistical categories. So that's hard to argue. But the thing is he's hot right now. I mean, and that's sort of the thing with Jake, and something that I kind of picked up on when I went and met with his older brother, Shuler, up at Murray State last spring, or two springs ago, I should say, is that when Jake's at his best, it's when he's hot and he's in a rhythm. And he's certainly in a rhythm right now. I think that's safe to say that he's probably playing some of the best ball over a 2-3-game stretch as he has at any point in his career. And if he can continue playing this well on Saturday in Florida, I think, again, I like their chances of coming out of the swamp with a win.
All right, Hell, last night, Coach Martin and the Gamecocks basketball team opens up the season with a 65-52 win over Upstate. And, you know, we expect Chris Silva to rack up double-doubles this year. He did so last night, 13 points, 11 rebounds. But talk about Kashawn Bryant, 21.7 rebounds, and looks like he's going to bring some much-needed talent and scoring capabilities to Coach Martin's squad.
Yeah, just another bigger athletic body, sort of like Silva. Obviously different kinds of players, but just a bigger body who's exciting and fun to watch, and certainly got a lot of skill as a scorer, which we saw last night. But I'd kind of want to temper some expectations there with him. Not that I don't think he's got the ability to be a good player, but when you're going against a team like Upstate, in your South Carolina, you should be able to out-athlete, out-explosive guys to the rim, if that's even a phrase. I think what South Carolina is going to need to do is first and foremost, get better at the guard position. And they're obviously a little shorthanded last night. And Trey Campbell, who got the start, the graduate transfer from Georgetown, missed most of the preseason, so he was a little rusty last night. But they're going to have to get better in the backcourt if we're talking about this team and what's ahead of them long-term in terms of being competitive in the SEC and trying to get back in the NCAA tournament. They're going to have to get better in the backcourt. And again, obviously some guys were out last night. I mean, only I think nine or 10 were just dressed and available to play. So if they can get things cleaned up in that backcourt, I think there could be some exciting games at Colonial Life this season. Because again, going back to Bryant, is such an exciting young player. And when you compare somebody with that type of athleticism along with Chris Silva, who's obviously one of the best players, not just in the SEC, but in the country, there's some reason for optimism for this team. But I want to see a little more out of their guard play for sure. And I'm sure Frank Martin and a lot of fans do too. Yeah, no doubt.
0 for 18 from 3-point land last night. Yeah. You got to find somebody I didn't even get one of those. They'll get back on the court Friday night at 7 p.m. against Stony Brook. Also at the Big Spur, you guys do a great job on recruiting. It was a tough afternoon yesterday for the Gamecocks. DJ Daniels, the commitment from Georgia Military Academy, flipped to Georgia. And it's an area where we were just talking about thin back there in the defensive backfield. So while that's a loss, you got to keep looking ahead. What's coming up down the line for the Gamecocks in this 2019? Recruiting class?
Well, they're going to have to obviously address that loss, and certainly not a surprise for anybody around here. Quite frankly, Sturgis was a surprise that he even committed in the first place way back in August. So I think it's safe to say that Muschamp and Travaris Robinson, defensive coordinator, were, I don't want to say preparing for this day, but they had some contingency plans in place, and now they're going to have to execute them. And I think they had already kind of hoped to add another defensive back to the class in addition to Daniel and Cam Smith, who's still committed and firm with his commitment. So I think first and foremost, you look at who the options are to replace Daniel. And one of the, I guess, first names on the list, if you will, is a guy who was actually committed to Georgia within the last month or so, and that's Jalen Perry. He's back on the market, decommitted. And has been to South Carolina since then and visited South Carolina right before he actually called the thing off. So I think that's the first name to look at. And, of course, Deion Sanders' son, Shiloh Shador's his younger brother, Shiloh Sanders, from out in Texas, is another guy who's certainly on the list since he took an official visit earlier this year. So, yeah, a couple of spots in the defensive back class and a few more along the lines, both sides. And going to be about it for those guys in 2019.
All right. Well, listen, you guys, I'm sure, will be down there on the ground in Gainesville. Another noon kickoff, but got thrown a bone with a 7:30 kickoff against UT or against Chattanooga the following week. I'm tired. I'm much like you. Hell, McGranahan, I am sick of this noon stuff this year. I get it. It's first world problems, but still, it wears on you after a while. So I know you and J.C. Sherbert, everybody at the Big Spur, y'all got it locked down when it comes to Carolina coverage.
That's right. Whittle and I will be down there this weekend for the game. And I love noon games. Get in, get out, actually get to watch some football if you're not traveling. I'm all about that life. Love the noon game.
Now, every offensive lineman you've ever interviewed, when you ask what's your favorite kickoff time, noon. Why? Get up, go eat, go play football, go eat again. Now, I don't mind a noon kickoff if I don't have to be on air at 7 a.m. for a pregame show. So let me tell you, let me quantify right now why I hate noon kickoffs. It's not the fact that I can go on about my day. It's the fact that I've got to be on air at 7 a.m., and I'm just not a morning person.
Yeah, you radio boys, I can't blame you for that, Sturge. It's tough rolling out of bed. I can't imagine having to roll out of bed a little earlier than 7 and try to be, try to make some sense. That's hard enough for me to do when I've been up for a few hours, let alone just rolling out of bed.
Week number one, hell, that alarm went off at 4:50 in the morning, and you got a better chance of me going to bed at 4:50 in the morning than you do of me getting up at 4:50 in the morning. All right, buddy, my best to your dad, your whole family. Thanks for everything you do with us, and we'll catch up here with you soon, bud.
All right, bro, thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
All right, there's Hal McGranahan from the Big Spur. Just a good dude. I've had a lot of fun with him back in the day. All right, it is open phone lines, 844-GSP, ESPN. South Carolina fans, your thoughts, even with a thin football team, I think you got a really good shot to go on the road and win this weekend. But you just can't – you just don't know what to think with that secondary. Also, can Boston College slow down – what has become the Clemson juggernaut, number 17, Boston College? And, of course, we'll feature them in our Dixie Vodka deep dive at the top of the 6 p.m. hour with their play-by-play, John Meterpole. But we have open phones for the rest of this hour. What's up this college football weekend? Your reactions to the college football playoff poll as well. All right, welcome back in. It's open phones for the rest of the hour. We'll talk with Boston College play-by-play at the top of the 6 p.m. hour in our Dixie Vodka deep dive. And, you know, Boston College, they've got to slow down what appears to be a team in Clemson that is just rolling into form right now. In some ways, Clemson has been doing what people would call their best Bama impersonation, because they've been taking the last month of the season, opponents literally behind the woodshed, and they've done it week after week after week, and they've done it in different manners. You know, a couple of times it's been through the running game, as it was at Wake Forest, and then with Louisville at home this past weekend, and, of course, with NC State at home. And then Florida State on the road, they did it more passing the ball. So they've been able to do it both ways. But they bring in to Saturday night's 8 p.m. primetime contest the nation's fourth-ranked scoring defense as well as the fourth-ranked scoring offense. You know, that's one thing you look at across college football. So many people do one or the other, Diesel. They don't do necessarily both. And I think what is maybe more impressive about Clemson having the nation's fourth-ranked scoring defense is the fact that, you know, in the last month, their games have been over by halftime, and they are getting players in there in the second half and getting them valuable experience, but they're not really giving up any points as well. So it bodes, it's a team that has Travis Etienne as a running back that you're featuring right now, nearly 900 yards of rushing. You got good receivers. You got a quarterback, a true freshman in Trevor Lawrence, that is, you know, one of the semifinalists for the Davey O'Brien Award, and things are going well. But BC's got something that Clemson needs to be concerned about. Number one, it's a night game up north. That has been a little bit of a problem in the past. Number two, they bring back a healthy A.J. Dillon. They have won three consecutive games, and they have tight ends. Tight ends are a major, major issue when it comes to, here recently to the Clemson defense. They've got four that have caught a lot of balls. They go seven deep, and they will play two tight ends on any given play. So the first month of the season, Clemson defense, you know, we talked about having to do it with your eyes because you played so many option offenses. You will see something completely different out of Steve Adazio's Boston College Eagles on Saturday night. We mentioned, can Florida stop the bleeding when it comes to the Gamecocks? Because, you know, here's the deal. You look at this ball game on Saturday, Diesel, and you go, South Carolina doesn't have a chance to win this game. You know, losing both your safeties for the year, you're moving parts around. You're absolutely – we talked about the depth of the defense – all year long, and was that going to catch up? And again, that's another question heading into Saturday's noon kickoff. But this much I figured out about South Carolina football this year: they're going to hang around and hang around. I thought they were dead in the water down 10 points on Saturday at Ole Miss in the fourth quarter. All they do is get up off the deck, score two consecutive touchdowns, and get out with a 48-44 win, and the defense played better in the fourth quarter, and they had to make a stop there in the final couple of minutes of the game when they had to, and they got it done. So while South Carolina's awfully beat up, headed down to Gainesville, I think the Gamecocks have a legitimate shot. Why? Jacob Bentley's rolling into form. you got enough running backs to survive a little bit of injuries with A.J. Turner and those guys. So you probably are going to have to try to do it the way that you did it on Saturday and win a scoring contest. And, dude, listen, it tastes like vinegar, the words coming out of my mouth when I said South Carolina did not have a chance to win a scoring contest at Ole Miss on Saturday. Yes, they did. They won 48-44. But they, you know, they did things this on Saturday that they hadn't done previously. You know, a kickoff return from Deebo Samuels for a touchdown. Bryan Edwards with a great catch down the sidelines in that long touchdown pass. Mon Dixon in that 65-yard or so run there in the fourth quarter. They got big plays in chunks. Time of possession is probably the most useless statistic in college football. And South Carolina's defense gave up, you know, 600 and some odd yards, but they won the football game. And there's something about it. And they held in there in the fourth quarter against Missouri in that driving rainstorm and all that a few weeks ago. Oh, yeah, you won that game. Missouri went in and beat Florida 38-17 this past weekend in the swamp. Don't think if you're Will Muschamp and staff, you aren't letting people know exactly about that. So, you know, that's it when it comes to the big questions, and we'll really get into breaking these games down over the next couple of days, because at 4:37 tomorrow, we'll talk with Don Munson, the voice of the Clemson Tigers. Also, when it comes to our local teams in Southern Conference action this weekend, the Furman Paladins, they're up on the road after a big 16-10 win at home this past weekend over Chattanooga. They're now 4-4. They're up in Lexington, Virginia at 1:30 on Saturday, taking on the VMI Cadets. These I've always wondered. You got cadets at the Citadel. You have cadets at the Naval Academy or the or West Point, but you have cadets at VMI. What's the difference between a cadet and a cadet?
The E, I think.
I've always been curious. Also, at 2 p.m. on Saturday in Southern Conference play, Samford 5-4. They're at the Citadel. Samford knocks off Wofford this past weekend. Wofford, another road matchup, 6-3 on the year. Wofford at Western Carolina, who's 3-6. That is a 3:30 kickoff up there in Cullowhee, and you can hear Jim Noble and crew call that game. So don't forget, you do have some college football tonight, D's. It is Maction. It will be MacTastic. Every other hyphen or every other hashtag we can get in for it, but it's not that bad of football on a Wednesday night. The Ohio Bobcats, 6-3 on the year. They're at the Miami of Ohio Redhawks, who are 3-6. Also at 8 p.m., Toledo, the Rockets, 5-4 on the season. They're at Northern Illinois, who is 6-3. So there's your MacTastic football tonight. Don't forget, it's ACC football on Thursday and Friday. Wake Forest at NC State tomorrow night, and Louisville at Syracuse on Friday night, not to mention Boise State and Fresno State as well. What are some of the other big games of the weekend? What are some of the other storylines? We'll give you those when we come back. Plus, give us your thoughts on college football, South Carolina, Clemson, or the college football playoff poll. That's 844-GSP-ESPN. So, Diesel, I'm seeing a lot of tweets out there, and you can get with me at Sturgis Sports, at Diesel on radio, of course, at ESPN Upstate. Don't forget about the Help There text line at 71307. Just put ESPN at the front of it. But I'm seeing a lot of tweets starting to break that playoff action on Friday night being moved up to Thursday night, but we will not have that case with Burns. If they move their game from Friday night, they're hosting Westside out of Anderson, they will move it to Saturday afternoon. Then all chaos breaks out with all the duties that everybody has for Saturday. So
is the rain coming out? Is that bad, Sturge? Are they just moving up for any rain possibilities now?
It's an 80% chance of rain, but it doesn't sound like it's a hard rain. Now, it's going to be chilly, of course, but, you know, in that part of football, is this not the wussification of America? I don't believe it's driving thunderstorms tomorrow night.
Yeah, if it's driving thunderstorms, I'm fine with the game being postponed today. But for a light rain shower in, what, mid-50s? What is that?
Or it'll be in the 40s probably. I guess it comes down to the South Carolina High School League wanting gate. You know, they get a cut off of every playoff game when it comes to admission. I don't know. But, you know, it seems like we see a lot more of this now than we did back in the day, and that's not a get-off-my-lawn segment. But one is, can Auburn hang with Georgia this weekend, Deez? You're talking about a Tigers team in Auburn that's got back-to-back wins on the road at Mississippi at Ole Miss. And then, of course, we gave Carolina a bunch of props in the previous segment for getting off the deck in the fourth quarter and winning at Ole Miss. Well, Jarrett Stidham and the Auburn Tigers did the exact same thing. And listen, that brings up another question of what we're going to do with Texas A&M. But, you know, this is the Deep South's oldest rivalry, not named Furman and Wofford, and it just looks like the Bulldogs, kind of like Clemson and Alabama, they're rolling into form right now, and they've got a balanced offense. The Bulldogs are doing it both running and throwing the ball, and the defense is playing well. So, you know, I love this phrase that Alan Green, the athletic director at Auburn, came out in defense of Gus Malzahn yesterday and said he is our coach of the future. He didn't say a year into the future, 2 years into the future, or 2 weeks into the future. But you know what? It was one of those things that it almost felt worse with him making that comment than just keeping his mouth shut. Well, this one ought to be interesting. It's our buddy Zach Brown. Zach, are you canceling your day on Friday for a little bit of drizzle, maybe a little bit of rain and some cold weather? Because I can tell you what, my bosses aren't going to stomach that.
No, and I didn't know you got your meteorology degree when you said it doesn't look like a heavy rain. I don't even know what that means. Neither do you.
It means when you're sitting out there at a high school football game, much like Zach Brown back in the day with Malden High School, and his son going, crap, I don't even want to be out here.
That's true, man. Well, listen, I'm going to tell you what, after looking at these new college football playoff bowls, if Clemson trips up against Boston College or against South Carolina or in the ACC championship game, you can write it down right now. There is no way they get back into the college football playoff mix. Absolutely zero.
I think I am mostly in agreement with you. However, you got to see what else goes on. You know, do we just have a Big Ten dysfunction go on with, say, Ohio State beat Michigan, then Northwestern turn around and beat Ohio State in the championship game? But, yeah, mostly I think you are correct. The only thing that I saw out of the College Football Playoff Committee last night, right or wrong, Zach, is they were giving the ACC a lot more credit than anybody else with four teams ranked in the top 17.
Well, and sure, and of course they should be, probably because basketball's tipping off and that's what they're thinking, but they should be getting a couple of those votes. But what I'm telling you is, you look at teams like Washington State, you know, should UCF still go undefeated? That argument's going to keep banging all year long. You know, Washington State's right there. Michigan's right there. You know, Georgia got to play Alabama, obviously, and that'll take care of itself. But I just don't see how they fall back into it if all of these teams continue to win like they're predicted to. And then you got some huge games. I mean, West Virginia's still got to play Oklahoma probably twice, you know, in a row. So it's just, there's so many big teams that can have so many good quality wins. And I think if Clemson trips up, yes, I see what you're saying. They're giving the ACC more love than they haven't traditionally in the past. But I still think that that's going to shake itself out by the end of the year. And at the end of the year, Clemson would be the only ACC left ranked in the top 25, which in all likelihood they should be, but then they're not going to make the playoffs if they trip up just once, and that's sad.
Well,
for Clemson,
that's when you become a Syracuse fan, because I've already called it. Syracuse is knocking off Notre Dame in Yankee Stadium in a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? So then you would have didn't he have the Notre Dame-Clemson argument of one came back and beat Syracuse with a third-team quarterback while the other lost? So, again, here's the deal. You know, I've seen all these various scenarios. What happens if Alabama loses? Blah, blah, blah. You know what? If you control your own destiny and you're ranked number one, you're ranked number two, then be that good, win out, and don't put it in the hands of the voters.
Yep. Unless you're Notre Dame, then you get the benefit of the doubt every year.
Yeah, but again, that Golden Dome is losing a little bit of luster here. When Syracuse, people do not realize, Zach, what a good job Dino Babers has done up there as the head coach of the Orange, and I think their quarterback brings something to the table that will give Notre Dame fits, and we shall see. Hey, it'd make it a whole lot more fun at this point in time. But, you know, getting back to the Southeastern Conference, Diesel, I was asking you, you know, about Auburn. We saw that comment, you know, he's our coach of the future. Was that more – because Auburn's losing to Georgia this weekend. You know, they get one win to get back in the top 25 to turn around and lose again this weekend. Is that statement from the Auburn athletic director more of an indictment that we don't have $60 million right now for our next head coach? And this is what I mean. People want to talk about the buyout at, what, $38 million. But then you got to also pay off all those assistant coaches and all that stuff. So you're adding another million or two to that. And then guess what? If you're going to go out and get somebody better than Gus Malzahn, you're going to pay through the nose.
Well, that's AD speak for we don't want to talk about it right now. We're trying to focus on this. Leave us alone about firing this guy. Let that argument take a step back. Put it in the back burner, back seat. We don't want to talk about it right now. That's what that means.
Yeah, because, you know, the mess is Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. They had that game won in the fourth quarter with 5.5 minutes left, and they let Kellen Mond throw the ball on the Auburn side of the field, up 10 points, and it's an interception in the flat, and the game changes on the dime. And I expect better out of coaches that just signed 10-year, $75 million contracts. But the defense fell apart there in the fourth quarter. I mean, couldn't tackle somebody. They literally let a Auburn wide receiver break like three tackles on a 60-yard run after a catch. And now you have an upcoming game against Ole Miss that you should be able to bounce back from. Ole Miss can put points on the board, no doubt about it. Now, their defense is an abomination. But what happens to Texas A&M and that faithful if they can't win this game and they drop to 5-5 at this point of the year? Again, it's year number one you're building, but Texas A&M thought higher of themselves than being at this point at this time. So those are some things to pay attention to when it comes to the Southeastern Conference this weekend. What about some other things going on in college football? You know what? When the coach of your the opposition has to talk and look hard to find out what a great long snapper the other team has, you don't like the chances for said school. That's why everybody send good vibes to Rutgers this week, because it may get ugly. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Some other things in college football. And then at the top of the 6 p.m. hour, it is our buddy John Metterpole, the voice of the Boston College Eagles, ahead of that 8 p.m. contest with the Clemson Tigers. Of course, you'll be able to hear that game on our sister station, Classic Rock, 93.3, the Planet Rocks, at 8 p.m. on Saturday. That means we'll be on with Ingles College Football Today at 3 p.m. and then give way to the Tiger Tailgate Show with Mark Childress and Pete Yannity at 5 p.m. Welcome back in. We're live at Smoke on the Water. Don't forget, next segment, Dixie Vodka Deep Dive on Boston College with John Metterpole, the play-by-play of the Boston College Eagles. But we were telling you, send good vibes to Rutgers this weekend, Diesel, because Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines, I think they're on a pretty incredible roll right now. And I had no issues with them coming up number four last night in the college football playoff poll, because both offensively and defensively, the Wolverines are just playing dominating football right now. But then you stop and think about, they're headed for a road contest this weekend, and it's to face Rutgers. So you're talking about a Rutgers team that hasn't had a win since week number one, when they had come back to beat Texas State. Since that time, Rutgers has been outscored roughly 40-13 by their opponents. This thing could get ugly on Saturday for the University of New Jersey. I mean, the Big Ten's got to be thanking themselves month after month, year after year. Thank you for securing that eastern side of the Big Ten Conference footprint with the University of Maryland and Rutgers.
Yeah, they messed up.
There are much better options out there.
Yeah, much better. I mean, they could have gone after West Virginia.
Now they would have never said, here's the thing. I don't know what type of academic school the University of New Jersey is, and that's exactly what Rutgers is. We're not being snarky when we say that. The Big Ten fancies themselves, and they are correct, as a much better group of academic institutions than adding West Virginia to the mix. However, is this stuff not about football right now?
It's all about football. No, but yep. No conferences out there. No athletic directors are getting better to say, you know what, we should really improve our academics in the field of basket weaving. We got to get a basket weaving school in our conference. They don't do that. It's all about football.
That's right. You don't see people going, let's add this school to our league because they got a great debate team. You know what I mean? But I'm with you. Rutgers is absolutely abysmal. Maryland and their dysfunction. And they do care about Maryland up in that area a little bit. But nothing. I mean, you want to talk about being an afterthought in the New York City market? That's exactly what the Rutgers Scarlet Knights are. Also, what do we find out? You know, we went on edge or went out on a ledge and said, we're going to go ahead and call it, at least I am, Syracuse with the upset of Notre Dame next weekend in Yankee Stadium. But this weekend, Florida State is headed up to South Bend. And you stop and think about it. There's been some great moments between Florida State and Notre Dame throughout the years. This just ain't going to be one of them. You know, Willie Taggart says that he is giving up the play calling this weekend so he can spend more time on the sideline talking to his players. But they've got a little bit of a quarterback quandary going on. You remember DeAndre Francois? He missed last week at NC State. It's been a frustrating season. And Diesel, do you make a decision when it comes to playing quarterback for your team based off of stats or based off of body language?
Okay. Both, I guess.
DeAndre Francois, I don't mean to pile on the young man, okay? But I'm sorry, he's just not that nice of a guy. All right, he found out a couple of years ago when they brought him as a sophomore quarterback to ACC football kickoff, and then he went out and was hurt in the opener against Alabama. He found out we were from South Carolina and proceeded to be, quite frankly, a jerk to us. But then you look on the sidelines last week at NC State with James Blackman, who was last year's starter after DeAndre Francois went down. This guy's on the sideline encouraging his teammates, getting in there, challenging them. He's got a smile on his face. Even though they're losing, he's still enjoying the moment. I'm not sure I roll with that for the rest of this year. You know what I mean? Because there's one guy with a scowl on his face who has better numbers, or another guy who is loving the moment, competing, trying to make his teammates better. I think I go with the positivity at this point with James Blackman, but this much we know, whichever one Florida State trots out there, it has been the play of quarterback Ian Book that is for Notre Dame in this run.
Well, to me,
to number three.
It kind of reminds me of Malik Henry in season three of Last Chance U, or John Franklin in season one of Last Chance U. These guys have awful attitudes. They don't want to be there.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're right. Give me the guy who doesn't have quite as much talent but wants to be there. Give me a guy who's got a lot of want to.
Well, Blackman threw for four touchdowns at NC State last week. They were a heck of a lot more competitive up there on the road than they were the previous week against Clemson at home. And I'm with you. You can't fix stupid. And I hate to say that about Malik Henry, but how many times can somebody be warned about the same thing over and over again and then not pay attention to it? By that, I mean, if you watch Last Chance U, how many times did officials and everybody else warn him about using the N-word on the football field? And let's quantify this with he's black. But you saw it as many times. Dude, they walk over to the coaches. If he says it again, he's out, blah, blah, blah. And all that guy wanted to do in Malik Henry was be disrespectful to the officials, be disrespectful to his coaching staff, and be disrespectful to his fellow players. How in the world do you bring that into a locker room? And if you look at it, I think he was scheduled to be back at Independence Community College this year and did not make it. So he has not progressed even anywhere since that 1 year at Independence Community College. So that's my point. I go with Blackman. He wanted to be out there. He was trying to make his teammates better. And he was productive, throwing for four touchdown passes this past weekend. Also, we mentioned this one, Diesel. I can tell you right now, we get off the air at 6:30 for Clemson basketball on Friday night. And I have an event to go to, but I will hopefully get home in time for what is going to be a Friday night Mountain West showdown. Fresno State, number 23. They're flying largely under the radar because it plays in the Mountain West, and they play a lot of night games, and they don't get much airtime. But let me tell you, these Bulldogs are legit. They are better than Central Florida. I will make that. They're 8-1. Central Florida's undefeated, but Fresno's better. And Diesel knows I don't like UCF, but it's the truth. They got the nation's second-best scoring defense, Diesel, and a offense that's led by a quarterback, Marcus McMarion, and they have just gotten better and better on the offensive side of the ball. But let's go back to that one phrase there, the second-best scoring defense in the country. You got to play defense. So now they get to go to the blue turf. And Boise State's pretty good there on that blue turf. That is going to be a broadcast at 10:15 on Friday night on ESPN2 that I plan on watching. But I have to ask you, Diesel, I thought back in the day that they finally told Boise State you can't wear all blue on your home blue turf. Did they not do that?
Yeah, it was my understanding that they decided that the uniform matching the field gave that team an unfair advantage. Because the other team would be harder for them to differentiate between right. The uniforms in the field.
Well, guess what? That's a rule that they must have kicked out of the rule books, because last week when I was flipping channels Thursday or Friday night, Boise State was on television at home, and they had blue helmets, blue jerseys, blue pants, blue socks, blue shoes on blue turf. And that's a little much. I mean, it was hard telling on television at times. You know, I can't imagine being there in person. But if Fresno State goes into Boise and gets a big, big win, then start paying attention to them. They're pushing UCF down our throat, and I'll give them credit. They're winning football games. But just like I said a couple after the Thursday night game last week or Friday last week, I had a tried-out pledge football team back in college that wanted to hit more than the UCF defense did. 670 yards to Temple, that's a lot of what I needed to know. So pay attention, Fresno State, Boise State on Friday night. That is a big game this college football weekend, just like Clemson at Boston College. We'll talk about that next on our Dixie Vodka Deep Dive.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.